This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.
I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan & Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
You're listening to the Pennsylvania Woodsman, powered by Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network.
This show is driven to provide relatable hunting and outdoor content in the Keystone State and surrounding Northeast.
On this show, you'll hear an array of perspectives from biologists and industry professionals
to average Joes with a lifetime of knowledge.
All centered around values aiming to be better outdoorsmen and women,
both in the field as well as home and daily life.
No clicks, no self-interest. Just the light in the pursuit of creation.
And now, your host,
the pride of Pennsylvania,
the man who shoots straight and won't steer you wrong,
Johnny Appleseed himself,
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Mitchell Shirk.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Pennsylvania Woodsman Podcast. I just got back from a fun trip. I can't believe I'm saying I got back from a fun trip in the middle of July, and I can't believe I'm about to say what I said, but I just got back from the beach, and actually had a really, really fun time. I remember, I haven't been to the beach for like 10 years. This was the first time to the beach in that long. And I was never a big beach person, and I was kind of up in the air about going. But you know what? I had a ton of fun this time. The beach was nice. We went to Stone Harbor, New Jersey. It was gorgeous. Nice water, nice beach. Stayed in a nice, quiet little house there that we rented. And the most fun part was just seeing my kids enjoy the beach. They've been to the beach, but not for quite a while. I think both the times my boys would have been on the beach, they've been probably too little to remember it. And this was the first time we got to spend an extended period of time. And man, they were riding waves, jumping waves, and swimming like crazy, and playing in sandcastles, and just having a hi-ho time. We had a great time, and it kind of made me want to stay a little bit longer. Although I don't know if I could have handled the sun and the heat and the hot sand that much longer, but I enjoyed every other aspect of it. So it's good to have a little bit of a break, and kind of turn the page here as we go through July and start thinking about some of the fun activities that are ahead of us here in that world. This week's episode, as we shift into talking about summer topics into the fall, this week I got to have a first. I got to have a couple firsts on this one, actually. I got to have my friend Todd Stauffer on the podcast, longtime friend, and I know he spends a couple of his days already. He's listened to the podcast quite a few times, and it's good to have a listener come onto the show. But the other first that was cool was it was the first time I got to have somebody over in my new little podcast studio, I'm going to call it. Just finished up my little basement project, and man, I have some high hopes that I'm going to be able to have more guests come over and do that. And I hope that happens in the future where I can have some people come over and do some more in-person podcasts, because they're a lot more fun to record. And I just enjoy doing that and having those conversations. And our conversation was an all-around BS session. We talked about a number of things. We started off talking about a shed hunting trip to north central Pennsylvania for elk sheds that Todd and I and two of our buddies took earlier this spring. We chatted about that a little bit, and we also got to discuss Todd's elk hunt that he got to go on in Pennsylvania a few years ago when he drew the tag, talk about that experience, and then we shift into Todd's upcoming season. We talk about Todd's trail cameras, his ways he likes to use them, and how he strategizes from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. And there's definitely things you're going to pick up on here as far as, you know, how he likes to use his cameras and benefit him. But I think the biggest thing I take away too is he's doing things in a way that's going to keep him in the field, in the woods, as much as possible, and be able to share those experiences with his brothers and his dad and family and friends. And he's trying to do that on a repetitive way as much as possible. And that was the fun conversation I had. He tells a couple stories of last season of a elusive buck he was after, and how he's going to hopefully try to close the chapter on this deer that he believes is still alive. So it's a fun conversation. Guys, thanks for tuning into this week's episode. I always appreciate it. Real quick before we dive into this episode, please listen, check out our sponsors. Great sponsors, and really glad to have them. Check out Huntworth Gear. If you go to huntworthgear.com, check out all they have to offer in Disruption, Tarnin, Vertec, and Obrey's Camo. There's a lot of cool patterns you can shop by season. There's a lot of good women's sections as well. Shop the Heat Boost technology for your heavier stuff. Any shipping over $200 is free. Huntworth Gear, I really love the quality of what they're bringing to the table. Also, Little Mountain Outfitters. Richland, Pennsylvania, Little Mountain Outfitters. Get your gear in, get it tuned up, buy your new gear. And if you're not close to Richland, go to littlemountainoutfitters.com, support a local business, and use the code WOODSMAN10. That's WOODSMAN10, and you get 10% off your next purchase from that bow shop. Everything bow hunting and even beyond. All right, thanks for tuning in, guys. Have a good one. I'm going to try to make it a priority this year to do other stuff just because I want to find a way to get the kid involved.
Yeah.
So, like, I was actually thinking, like, maybe I'll do something I haven't done in years and, like, go squirrel hunting. I don't know.
I think every September about soon after small game opens, mm-hmm. like, me and my uncle and cousins, like, we'll get some of us, dad, we'll go to Blue Marsh and do one day, one Saturday morning,
right.
squirrel hunt, rabbit hunt, whatever. That's always fun just to get out there. I like small game hunting growing up.
I do too. I mean, it's one of those things, it's not that I don't like it, it's just there's fun part of it and there's work part of it, and I don't know, sometimes you just, I don't know, if I find excuses not to do it even though I enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But anyway, well, Todd, thanks for coming over. For those who don't know, this is the first time I get to have Mr. Todd Stauffer on the show, and this is the first podcast I have done down here in my basement since it's finished.
Looks pretty nice. I'll say that.
I still got a little bit of work to do. I want to put a, like, I got a gun rack over there. I want to put my flintlock over a fireplace, and then I want to wait one day when Leanne is away and then hang some deer heads down here. Because if I do it when she's here, I'll probably get complained at. But when she's away, like right now, if we weren't doing a podcast, it'd be a great time to just strategically put some deer heads.
Yeah. No, I think there would be nice, and you got pretty good room over here for couple deer heads or whatever.
So. So we agreed we're gonna. She wants to make. I started bringing, like, I brought that sign down. I had my turkey mount and I had a bear rug here, and I started putting stuff. And she's like, "Well, isn't there gonna be any room for family stuff?" And I had to pump the brakes and be like, "Yeah, I guess we can hang one picture over in that corner. And nobody will see it, but the rest of it."
Yeah. No, I get it.
But no, this is a pleasure. I always enjoy doing it in person. Like, you see those podcasts and shows and stuff where people do them in person all the time, the video and stuff. Like, I would love to do that. I just don't know if I'll ever get it to that point. But no, thanks for coming over and shooting the breeze in the summertime.
No, thanks for having me. I always like talking hunting. So
how can you not?
Whatever.
I think the first thing we need to do, we need to pick on Sage and Cody just a little bit.
It's fine with me.
So, This spring, we didn't talk. I didn't talk about this on the show at all. I think it'd be a good time to talk about that. This spring, you and Sage invited me in March to go up to north central Pennsylvania and go elk shed hunting. But you guys have been doing that for a while.
This would have been our third year, maybe.
Okay.
I think so. Yeah. 2 years ago, I think, if I have this right, 2 years ago we found 1 6-point side.
Yeah, the first year you went, right?
Yeah, the first year. And then last year we didn't find anything. And this year we found the double and you found the whitetail shed, which I never find a whitetail shed. I can look and look and I'll never find those. So to find the elk sheds, that was pretty cool to find a match set. So,
but you guys have been doing this trip. This is the third year. You just basically make a day trip. You got up, I think we left at what? 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, I left my place just before 3 and got Cody, and then we were up to Sage's just before 4, and we left there right around 4 to go up. But yeah, it's just a day trip, and it kind of all started when I got drawn for my elk tag.
Yeah, how was that experience?
It was good. Didn't see as many as I thought we'd see.
You drew in the regular season, November, for a cow?
I drew for a cow tag in the regular rifle season. Yep. And that was kind of just, I'm just going to put in just to see what happens. And that was my third year putting in, and got drawn. But yeah, went up there and I think we did 30 to 40 miles throughout the week. And I missed a cow. We only saw elk Thursday morning, right in the same, basically the same field we found the sheds, missed a cow. And then there was two bulls with her. So, that's kind of how I figured out where to go for sheds. Yeah, just when I was up there hunting, I marked everything on Onyx where the parking spots were and where we walked and stuff, and kind of just been doing that the last few years of seeing what we can find.
It's been fun because it was another fun day of hanging out with boys and doing something fun. Like normally I think about like the camaraderie camp thing in deer season at camp, or you know, going up and making drives one day or whatever, or something like that. But this is a new excuse in March to get out and do something.
Yeah, it's a long day, but it's fun. Like go out there, see new area, and just walk around.
Makes your imagination run when you're doing that.
Oh yeah.
Like the first part of that day, I found that whitetail shed pretty early in the morning, and shortly after I found the whitetail shed, you know, it was mid to end of March when we were doing that.
Yeah.
And I had heard some turkeys call and walked up on a flock, and I think I counted 28 birds. There was 2 or 3 longbeard strutting. There was 7 or 8 jakes, and the rest were hens and jennies. But that time of year, just seeing them do that thing, and it got the fuel going for turkey season coming up in a few months, and that was just an enjoyable day.
Yeah. After we found those sheds, I sent a text to my one buddy. They have a camp up there, not far. But I sent him, and I ended up FaceTiming him and showed him, and he knew exactly where we were. There's a camp it was within a few miles of that spot, and they always are looking for elk sheds there. And they were there, I think, a week before in that field looking and didn't find them. So when he sent the pictures over to him, he's like, I was just there. Like, what the world?
It makes you wonder if they were there for – like 24, 48 hours or something like that. Because I didn't realize how popular that is now.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's like a high tense thing. And I had some people, I had some people saying, like, you might not want to be posting that right away, you know, with your social. And I actually didn't post any of that stuff right away. I don't know, just out of common courtesy, I didn't want to be that guy that does a podcast and shows that and stuff.
Yeah.
It was still like that was a fun experience, but you guys have been doing it a while. But Cody and Sage have been part of it longer. This was my first year, and Cody and Sage have been going longer. And Cody and Sage are our buddies that are excellent hunters and would be awesome to include in something like this. But they just somehow decide that they don't want to be part of this, and I feel like we got to pick on them a little bit.
Well, I will say it's nice doing something that they haven't done. Like, they can go out in the woods and find sheds like no problem, and that's something I can't do. So to do this. Be like, yeah, I'll do this. And they don't. Hey, that's fine with me.
Well, then we get the perfect platform to make fun of them. Like, for instance, I had Cody on the show once before. And speaking truthfully from the heart, it was one of my favorite episodes I've done. I mean, I don't have a favorite episode, but I've done a bunch. And that was an awesome episode. Like, Cody is a wealth of knowledge, has had some great experiences. I think he draws from a lot of good things. And I'm going to try to you know, butter him up as much as possible so he blushes when he listens to this. And
he does put in the work for what he's getting every
year. He does, but he's a very thought-provoking individual.
Yeah.
Asks a lot of good questions and just drives. And Sage, you know, I've hunted now with a couple times and been fortunate enough to go to camp with him stuff, and Sage just goes. Like, one of the things I love about him is he never has an off switch. He just goes, which I love, and he's always such a good, positive person to be around.
Yep.
And he's a damn good woodsman.
Yeah,
really knows. They're fun, and they're, like, I love having those people. It's not often you get to have people with the experience that those guys have onto a show like this. And every time I think of, like, getting them on, like, you know that the part of Ricky Bobby in the movie when he's, like, doing the interview and he's going, I don't know what to do with my hands. I feel like that's Sage. I don't know what to do with my hands right
now. Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely like hunting with, you know, I haven't hunted with Cody, but hunted with Sage a bunch, and I definitely like doing that. Like, it's a, we're going to hunt all day. There's not, we're going to take lunch and we're going to take breaks here and there. It's like, he don't care if you go out and you want to hunt for a couple hours, he'll stay out.
Yep.
And it's like, yeah, I like having that go mentality of, like, we're going to hunt. We're not going to just sit at a cabin.
Yeah, when stuff gets hard, you know, those guys have determination that sometimes I wish I had.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'm a lazy person or, like, not determined. I think they're more than I am.
Yeah.
It's just, that's fun to be around. So, you know, I'd love to have them on and do a podcast like this. We were talking about getting together this fall and doing some hunts, and I would love to do those podcasts. And we'll probably pick on them for a bunch from now until then and go from that.
No.
But anyway, it's you and me holding down the fort today. So what's new, Todd? Here we are in July, and it's the dog days of summer.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot new. Just the excitement of what's showing up on camera right now.
Okay.
I've been putting mineral out here for a couple months now, and just waiting to see what shows up, and happy with what's showing up.
What does deer season preparation look like for you at this point in your life?
Right now, it's run cameras all year.
Okay.
I know some people don't run them over, you know, January to, you know, now, basically, when they start growing. But I run all year. So I keep them going. And as soon as hunting season over, I'll put some mineral out just to see what bucks have made it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, get them back on camera and stuff. And then after that, I kind of, like, over spring, I kind of just relax. I don't do too much.
Mm-hmm. Just keep them running.
Yeah, keep them running. Like, they're all cell cameras, so I get the pictures.
Okay. Do you run any regular cameras anymore?
No.
Okay.
Nope. I started out with that, and it was every 2 weeks I was going back, checking cameras, putting mineral out. But since cell came out, I love it because you don't got to go back to check batteries. You don't have to check cards. It's all there on your phone, so you can stay out of the woods more. So now I go back, like, try to get back once a month, something like that, put mineral out, corn out, whatever. But yeah, basically right now it's just get inventory.
Yeah.
And see what's around. I should shoot my bow a lot more than I do. I think we all say that.
Yeah, I say that too.
But yeah, other than that, it's just hanging out and seeing what's coming.
So when you talk about inventory, like, I still run a lot of regular cameras. I have cell cameras and I use them for certain things, but I still run a lot of regular cameras, especially, like, in the mountains where I don't have cell service. And, you know, if you're running a cheaper camera or something like that, and you're not as worried about, you know, the place and location and losses, like, sometimes I'll expand out and I'm not afraid to just stick it. And if I don't collect the information I want, I'm good. But cell cameras, you usually have a little bit more invested into them between the camera itself and then the plans and such like that. So I don't know about you, but I don't have that many cell cameras just because I don't want to continue to pay too much. So I feel like every time I have a cell camera, let's just say I'm using 4 cell cameras and I hunt too many places. I struggle sometimes of like, is this the confidence, do I have the confidence in putting it in this spot, and this is going to get my maximum inventory and information? Am I getting the most out of this camera?
Yeah.
Knowing I only have, you know, 2, 3, 4 of them. So, like, how do you handle, like, I know you talked about, you know, for inventory purposes, using mineral and corn, but how do you switch that when it goes towards hunting season?
So basically I leave where my cameras are. They're there all year.
Okay.
I don't really switch because of deer patterns or anything like that. I really don't use my cameras to, I guess, keep track of certain deer. I use them more just to see what's there.
Yeah.
That's how I got into the cameras too. Like, we were hunting farms and stuff, and it was like, we go back and sit and see nothing. We're like, is there anything here? So we put cameras out. Yeah, there's deer here. So that's how we kind of knew what was around, and it gave us kind of more motivation to get out and hunt. But I mean, right now it's just, when it comes hunting season, I just go and, like, I have stands by the cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's, I know the deer. I hunt smaller properties too, so right. They, like, there's only so many paths that you can sit that they're going to come by. So,
well, that's a good thing to note when we're talking about this, is like the size of the property that you're hunting, I think, does have a lot of influence, and you're not really moving around too much.
Yeah.
You're trying to strategically place stuff at the best spot on a small property and then hunt it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, my place is 3.5 acres. I basically have 2 spots. I got one off the lane and then one down back. And then they're either going to, most times if they're down back, they'll come up past, like, my blind up off the lane. So I kind of know how they're going. And then my other spot, it's small patch of woods, and then it's all fields.
Mm-hmm.
So I just sit in the tree line, whatever, and just wait for them to come out in the field and take my shot.
So one of the things that I've heard a lot of people talk about, and I've talked about this too, is small properties and making sure you don't overhunt it and pressure it and stuff. But I will say, there's sometimes, if you have the right setup on a field, I feel like you can get away with hunting a lot. So what has been your experience on some of these properties that are small, and how do you handle pressure?
So at my place, there's not too much pressure. I guess there's some pressure around, but, like,
I got immediate area.
Yeah, I'm kind of cut off from it. But the neighboring properties, they hunt pretty good. And I actually, like, I talked to them, and they've shot a couple of the buck now that I've had on camera on my place, on theirs. But then back in my other spot, I think last year I hunted, I think it was like 42 of the 49 days in archery that I could. And I hunted the same stand just about every day.
And did you ever feel like there was a diminishing returns in that?
I saw, I forget the exact number, but I saw, now this is, not sure of the word, but if a deer came out in the field, I counted it. If it went back in and came back out, I counted it again.
Yeah.
I didn't know if it was the same one, but I saw over 600 deer in just archery season, and 112 buck. So
that's pretty impressive. Now, how many of the buck do you think were identified multiple times throughout the season?
Multiple times. I mean, day to day, they were probably the same ones coming out. But it was anything from a spike to a good 7, good 8.
Mm-hmm.
They were coming out, just not the one I was after.
Sure.
But yeah, day to day, they were always, I mean, I'm sure I counted the same doe 3 times some days.
Right.
But if they went away and came back, I just kept counting.
What do you think makes it set up that you can hunt it so consistently and still have good hunts on a regular basis?
So, access. How I come in, like, normally I don't see any deer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of coming through a valley up to the top of the hill to the field, and all the bedding is past me yet. And that bedding comes up right to the field. So unless they're right there or in the field, I never spooked any, never. And I only hunted some mornings, I guess, last year there, but mostly it was just evenings.
Okay.
And I'd go in, make sure there was nothing in the field when I got there, and hop in, and they'd come out, you know, anytime after that.
do you have any trouble getting out of it once you're on a field edge like that?
Couple times I would say the deer saw me, but it was always too dark to really tell what I was till I got down. And like I said, when I get down, I'm in a tree line and I walk downhill. Mm-hmm. So they're all above me and they don't see me. Once I'm down out of my tree, they don't see me. So
does it seem like the dominant wind keeps you in a position where you're not getting winded too much?
Yeah. Yeah, last year I hunted the wind a lot. And then there was times where it was a little iffy, but I knew what was there. And I was like, I got to hunt. Like, I'm running out of time. Mm-hmm. So I just hunted anyways. And I can't say, I forget what the wind was when the one stepped out a couple times. But, yeah, no one really knew I was there. It was just they came out, fed in the beans, and went out. They were more worried about the cars driving by and, you know, obviously the landowner I'm at and the neighbors there, that they're out playing whatever. They'll look down at them and stuff. Mm-hmm. They don't mess with me too much.
That's not like you're hunting outside of the city limits, but you're hunting in a rural area, but mm-hmm. it's amidst people and stuff like that. And I'm glad we're talking about this because I have observed that people, we talk about pressure all the time in hunting, and pressure is important, and I've seen that too. But I think this example you're sharing is a perfect story of sometimes we can maybe overdo the pressure side of or overthink the pressure.
Yeah.
So have you noticed that in other places? Is there other places you hunt where like you have a completely different mindset and you hunt it fewer times?
I wouldn't say fewer times. Blue Marsh. I mean, we hunt Blue Marsh every rifle season. And there, I mean, opening day, you can have guys doing deer drives. We do deer drives. But I can't complain, but it can be a point where everywhere you go, there's people. Mm. But we do what we do, and sometimes guys will, you know, potluck and sit where we're going. They kind of know we're back there every year, and they are like, oh, these guys come back, you know, Saturday morning, they do drive, so let's go sit here.
Oh, yeah.
But that stuff happens. Can't get mad at them. It's public land, and I'd rather see people get deer than not, like us just pushing to no one. So, but yeah, we don't hunt that area any less than we would normally.
Yeah.
Like I said, we do it every year.
Yeah.
Whether there's people there or not, we go back. And then there's been a couple years where a group's already pushed through the whole spot we were going to push. Sometimes we push it anyways, and we still get deer out of it.
That's an interesting observation.
They all circle back. Most times the deer are circling back or going back through the drives.
When you do that, do you, like if you get into a situation where somebody pushed it and you say we're going to do it anyway, you ever push it differently then?
Not really. I would say most times we push it about the same way every time. We don't really, in rifle, we don't really worry about wind. We will here and there on a couple of the drives, but for the most part, we have our way of pushing it and what works best, and we just do it.
Gotcha. Talked about shooting your bow a little bit more. Yeah, I don't know. I think that all the time. I need to do a better job, and I was thinking at one point of buying a new bow. I thought, man, I don't shoot my bow enough to justify buying a new one, so I just stick with the old one. But I did shoot some new ones, and it kind of motivated me a little bit more. How do you stay motivated to keep in shooting form and in shooting ready for this fall?
Basically by what's on camera.
Fair enough.
So I forget when it was. It would have been 2 years ago, I guess. I did the Lancaster Archery customer appreciation event.
Yeah.
And I got a new sight for my bow. And obviously getting a new sight, like you should figure that out pretty soon.
Mm-hmm.
So I shot a bunch that summer, last 2 years ago. And then, yeah, this summer, like, I shot a little bit, but we went out, me and my uncle and cousin and his girlfriend went out to TAC Somerset.
Yeah? Oh, that's right. I do remember. You showed me pictures of that.
And
how
we
was
shot.
That?
That's fun. It's
Is
a good
time. Is
that
the first time you ever did it?
Second. Yeah, I was there 2 years ago. But it was 2 years ago, we only shot one day. It fills up so fast.
Mm.
And we only shot the one day. And this year we shot Friday and Saturday. I think we did five or six courses.
Wow.
Three each day. But it's a good time, but take extra arrows.
How many is extra?
I think I lost six.
Did you?
Yeah. I went to Little Mountain and bought six just, you know, for backup. And I knew I was going out there, so I went out there and, yeah, lost six. And now I have six good ones at home yet, so we're okay.
I've never shot one. What's the challenging part for you? Is it the distance? Is it some of the shot setups are a little bit more challenging than you realize just the way they have it set up with undulation and branches and stuff? Or?
Yeah, your shots. Distance doesn't really bother me too much. But some of the shots were just stupid.
Mm.
Like, you're going to bust an arrow. So, like, a lot of them, if you found an arrow that was still good, like, you could search behind the target for a little bit. You found an arrow that would be close to yours, you'd keep it. And you get to one of those targets where you know you're going to bust an arrow, you use that. Like, save yours, use that. And we did that a couple times. But I think the hardest one was, I think it was a white wolf behind a boulder. And it was 60, 67 yards maybe. Somewhere mid-60s. But if you basically had to skin the top of the boulder to hit the bullseye. And it was just like one of those where it's impossible. But we went down when we shot that. We went down, like, you could see there was a clear line from where all the arrows are hitting to the 12 ring.
Mm.
Like, that boulder just cut the target in half. And everyone was hitting high.
If you're looking to simplify your food plot system while enhancing the quality of your soil, you need to check out Vitalize Seed Company. Vitalize provides top quality seed blends designed to fit into their 1-2 planting system. The system has been designed to allow highly diverse plant species to grow synergistically, optimizing nutrient uptake and cycling the way God intended. Reduce your inputs, build your soil, and maximize the quality tonnage for the wildlife in your area. Find out more about this system and get your seed at vitalizeseed.com. And be sure to check them out on Instagram and Facebook.
So it's some of those shots. And then you got some that you're shooting through saplings. You go down, the saplings are just shredded from arrows.
Mm.
So the shots are definitely the hardest part.
Distance. When you do a shooting experience like that, do you think it aids for you shooting at game in the fall?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely gives you out there, it definitely helps you more with a shot process, taking your time, not just an open target where you're just pulling up, aiming, shooting.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you take your time, makes you really look what's in your way, all that. I'm not good with judging distances out that far.
It's tough.
20, 30 yards I can do, but when you're getting out that far, I'm lost. So definitely, yeah, say your shot process, mm-hmm, come fall is a lot easier to do.
That's good. Yeah, shot sequence I think is important. Just having something that when you get excited, you go on autopilot.
Yeah.
I find myself many times, like, crumbling when game comes. So, like, trying to fix that is a challenge. And I think, first off, having a shot process in order helps. But second of all, doing enough reps to get you prepared.
Yeah.
But you can't replicate. I don't know what other way to replicate putting a dandy buck in front of you and making that shot happen.
Right.
Really don't.
Right. Yeah, I know before last year I was a person where if it was legal, I was shooting.
Okay.
Doe, buck, whatever. I was filling tags.
Mm-hmm.
And last year was the first year I picked one buck. And I was like, that's what I'm going to wait for. Not shooting any doe at this spot, not ruining anything. And I waited, but the one day he came in, I don't think I had buck fever, but part of me thinks I did.
Mm-hmm. Like,
he was coming down, and the doe was at 40 yards, and I'm good to 40. I'm confident to 40. He was, the closest I ranged him was 51.
Mm.
And I remember hooking my release, and then I just watched him. Like, I knew he was coming, so I don't know why I didn't draw and, like, get ready or anything. But it could have just happened that fast too. To me, it happened really fast that he just ran to that doe and pushed her back in the woods. And I never had a shot, but like, I remember hooking my release, but after that, I kind of like blanked out, I think. I don't know. It was one of those experiences where, like you said, once a deer comes in, things might not all go to autopilot, but.
And that experience right there, like, I know when you have something and then it doesn't happen, like, it's easy to get bummed out or upset because you wanted it so bad, you wanted to finish it. But I'm at a point now, too, where even though I get that, I also appreciate that experience a lot more than I used to.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that you had a deer you were after, clipped your release on, and had such an adrenaline excitement rush that it was borderline blackout, you won't forget that. Like, yeah, how many times did you lay in bed at night and think about that?
A lot. I thought, man, if I only practiced out to 50 or 60 yards and was confident out to there. I saw him twice last year, and both times when he first stepped out, he was at that 60 to 70 mark.
That's a poke.
Yeah. And I was like, my biggest thing was I didn't want to shoot and wound him.
Oh, no.
Like, I wanted to make sure I made a good shot on him and all that. So I said, if you come into 40, and he was on my cameras well within that range before, so I knew he came down to that corner. I was like, I just got to be patient. And it just didn't happen.
But, sometimes it doesn't.
Nope. And that's fine. I enjoyed being able to hunt a deer of that size.
Mm-hmm.
I never hunted a deer that size.
What'd you learn from that experience going from you were content shooting the first legal buck that got you happy to seeing a deer that was of exceptional caliber? You knew this is something that doesn't happen every day, and you just said, this is what I want, and you went after it. What did you learn in that experience?
That I can be patient.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel impatient throughout the process?
Not really, no. So I got, my brothers and, Luke,
mm-hmm.
they always busted on me. Like, I shoot small deer and I shoot small buck and this and that. And I joked with them, like, I played along here and there, but like, little bucks would come out and they're like, oh, shoot it. I said, no, like, I did it to prove them wrong, that I can hold out for a bigger buck, and to myself that sure. I can wait.
Was it hard passing bucks?
No, it really wasn't.
Okay.
There was a couple nice 8 points that I would have been happy with. And then there was other bucks that – there was a 1 7-point that resembled a buck at home on my wall already. So I was like, I don't need another one of them. So it wasn't as hard as I thought it was, but I think that's because I knew what was there.
Oh, sure.
And he was still showing up on camera, like, pretty regularly. So it wasn't like he vanished. So I knew I still had a chance. And then when he came out, like, I was happy to see him. Like I said, I'd never hunted a buck that, and just to be able to be there and see that. There was only one other time upstate. I'm not sure if you were there or not. It was the deer bear season.
Yeah, I was there for that.
When that big one ran down.
It went flying
to Earl, came down past me and down past Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was a driver on that one.
Okay.
Yeah, because I remember we were doing the drive, and I forget what somebody said on the radio, and I made a joke about, yeah, I just heard him shoot, and we're doing drives with a bow.
Yeah.
And it was funny because right after that, they thought I was serious because you had just shot, and of course the standards could hear the shooting.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the only other big buck that I've ever mm-hmm. seen and hunted, basically, I guess you could say.
And that was that was a cool experience, but that was a different experience because you saw a flash of it, and it was this quick excitement of trying to get a shot off.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know. It was a good experience this past year of just being able to go out and just not necessarily be relaxed, but like not feel pressure that I need to fill tags.
Mm-hmm.
I shot a doe at home, and I shot a doe and rifle on public, so I had meat.
Mm-hmm.
It's only me, so I didn't need a whole lot. I didn't need more meat necessarily.
Yeah.
If he would have came out and gave me a shot, yeah, I would have taken all of it. But sure. It was kind of, there was that mix of relaxed but yet stress of not knowing if I'm hunting a ghost or not.
I get that 100%. And I think the, I think it's a cool learning experience for, because this whole mix of hunting community, I mean, you get every angle of it, and people get set on shooting the first legal buck, and then, you know, we get, you know, razz each other as buddies, but then there's people that genuinely get, like, frustrated that you would pass a nice buck and that you'd hold out, or there's people that would get genuinely frustrated. Why are you shooting the same buck you shot last year, year and a half? Well, who cares? You bought your license. Yeah, what's it matter?
Yeah. Yeah, I've always been just shoot what you want. Yeah. Shoot what makes you happy. I know my oldest brother Kyle, like, he's more of a trophy hunter. He'll pass buck up. He did, well, 2 years ago. 2 years ago, my brother Scott, he shot a nice 10-point back there, and I was in the stand with him. I videoed that. That was one of my top buck back there, and I already shot. I shot a 7-point at home, which would have been my first buck at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at home it was whatever legal buck came in, I was going to shoot for the first one off my property.
Sure.
But yeah, videoed my brother shooting that one, and I was like, he's like, I don't want to shoot your big one, this and that. I'm like, dude, I'm telling you to shoot it. Like, just go back and shoot it. Like, he didn't get that was his first archery buck. So I took him back 3 years before that, and he hit buck, but we just could not, something about it, we just could not find him.
Mm.
First one he missed. That was a miss. And then the second one, I think it was just a shoulder shot. And he ran across. We trailed him for a while, never found him. And then the third year, he shot one, literally came under the stand, and it was just, I don't think he knew, or maybe he did, or just buck fever. It was a really nice buck. I don't even know what it was, an 8-point. I didn't really pay attention, but I didn't even video, which I was kind of upset about. I wanted to video it, but I was just ranging, and he came under, and Scott put his 20 on him. And when they're at the base of your tree, like, your 20's going to be, your 20 yard pin's going to be high. And he just skimmed him.
Mm.
And we trailed him. We got a dog in there, and we trailed him for 2 days. Tried to find him, never found him.
Mm.
And then, yeah, 2 years ago, he shot the 10 point. But yeah, he's, last year, like, Scott did the same thing. He's like, I'm just letting you hunt. Like, I don't want to come back there and shoot your big guy. I was like, that's on you. I'm like, okay, that's fine. But I tell buddies, yo, you want to come back and hunt around it? I don't care.
Yeah.
Like, if one of you would get him, I'd be happy.
Right.
I just want to be able to see him and hold him. That's all I want to do, whether I got him or not. I took my dad back there the one evening, and he actually came out. That was the day that I almost got a shot at him.
Oh, your dad was with you that night?
He was in the blind on the other side.
Okay.
Of the field. So the field kind of has a hill. I couldn't see him, and dad couldn't see me, but the first time he came out, the buck came towards me, and then my dad actually shot a doe that night there, and later on the buck came out, and like, dad could see him. It was right at dark, but I told dad, I said, hey, shoot whatever you want. Like, if there's a good 8-point, whatever, shoot it. Like, I just wanted to see him shoot something.
Sure.
Like, he knew there was good buck back there, and like, I sent videos. I think I probably sent you some Snapchats and stuff of the buck walking right in front of me and stuff. So dad was like, I'll be happy with a doe. I'm like, okay, whatever. Come back, shoot a doe, shoot a buck, whatever. And if that buck would have walked down to him and he would have shot it, I would have been just as happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, to me, I don't care who gets him, or, you know, like I said, I videoed Scott shoot the big 10 back there. I videoed Kyle at Blue Marsh shoot a nice 8-point. Like, I had my buck at that point. I don't care. Like, I'll be just as happy for you shooting a deer. I'm just glad I can be there in video or whatever, that you guys have that video to look back on or whatever.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah. I'm very much, I don't need the biggest buck. Like, even upstate late season flintlock hunting, I'll drive all day. I don't need to shoot. But if other guys are shooting doe or whatever, I'm happy for them. Like, have at it.
I didn't get to go last year. I know last year was the first year with the areas that we do that hunt. The DMAP was open with a rifle. And I was kind of like, I kind of wrinkled my nose at first until it rained. And it was like, oh, this is nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it felt different going up there with rifles this year, but it worked out because of the weather. We would have had a lot of misfires.
I was going to say, you guys had a good hunt this year on that one.
Yeah, Sage. Me and Sage were up there Friday, and he got a doe. And then Saturday, Dale got a doe. Did we get any more?
Don't remember. I just remember you guys. I just remember seeing pictures of you guys shooting deer and like, darn it, I'm not there this year. I don't even remember what happened. I ended up having to stay home for something. But no, I agree with everything you're saying. So let's play this one out. So now here we go, going into 26-27 hunting season. We have no idea, but let's just say you're shaping up for a season just like last year, where there's a deer of an exceptional caliber and it's doing similar things or whatever. You just think, I'm gonna try this again. I'm gonna do this again. Is there anything you learned from last year that you would try to incorporate or do differently for this year?
The only thing I can think of right now is there's another tree line that divides the fields, putting a stand in there. They seem like it's two soybean fields. They seem like they basically go from the bedding across the top field to the bottom field and work their way over across the road to, there's a cornfield over there. I think that was beans last year. I forget. But try to put a stand or a blind in there. The only problem I need to figure out is, I know last year they would do that, and then at night they'd all be right there. So to get out without blowing the fields out, that's going to be my issue. Other than that, just sit the same spot and just hope and pray.
Ride it out.
I put my dad in the blind on the other side. I could probably do that again, sit over there. I know a lot of deer. I've seen deer come from that side. And they have seen, last year they seemed to go that way towards dark too, down that way. The big one I was after, I never saw him go that way, but I've seen other good buck go down there, so I figured he's down there too. There are a couple other places back there that I'd like to knock on doors. Try to figure out a loop. I think he's making a pretty big circle. Don't have any confirmation on that except for one time that the landowner I hunt saw him down the road. So that's the only other thing. Try to figure out another spot where he could be coming through. Put up a camera.
Spot to learn something.
Yeah, put up a camera, see what's coming through. If he's coming through, great. If not, okay. Another check on the map where he's not there.
Yeah.
And just figure out something else.
Right.
But, yeah, I think this year I'm just going to kind of stick to the plan, see if he makes a mistake, and go from there.
And just make sure you execute one.
Yeah, when time's needed, yeah.
100%. You have any other plans for this fall?
Well, I was hoping to get drawn for Iowa, but we did not get drawn for that.
Oh.
This was our fifth or sixth year putting in. And we didn't get drawn. But there's potential I might go to Texas. I got a friend down there. They have a ranch. They aren't quite set up for deer hunts and stuff. So I'm not sure if I'd go down there or not. Still kind of waiting on that, but with what I have on camera, I'm kind of like, maybe I'll just stick around home. Since I drive truck out to Ohio, I have customers that have land out there, so I thought about talking to one of them again. I hunted out there 2019, maybe 2018, something like that, probably. And seen a few good buck out there. Didn't get a shot at any, but I thought about going out there. It's a little closer than Texas.
It's a lot closer than Texas.
Yeah, I can drive out there, be out there for a week or whatever, come back. But other than that, yeah, I think I'm just going to see how those plans fall into place and just hunt hard around home.
I like that. I stretch myself too thin all the time. I want to do too much and go here and go there and learn this and learn that. And the more places I go and more places I prep, then the more I go. Should I sit here tonight? Should I go here tonight? And how should I? Then I go analysis by paralysis. And I shouldn't say analysis by paralysis. I know the potential when you got multiple spots, and especially if like you have a spot where, you know, I could sit three different spots tonight. The wind's right for it, and the conditions are right for it, and I want to sit all three of them. I can't. So in a sense, I envy the setup that you're describing because you've got one plan. It's going to be hard to deviate from it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of how last year was. Like, I had the buck I wanted after. I was like, I had good buck show up at home. I always have good buck come rut show up at home. Seems like there's a little pocket of doe that stick around there, and the buck come through. So, like, there was one time last year during the rut when a good 8-point showed up at home. I was like, hey, if I get a shot at him, I'll take him and give up the big guy. But it just didn't happen, so I just stuck with the plan of, okay, I'm going for him, and that's it. But yet, when you have buck of that size on camera, regular, it's pretty hard to be like, yeah, no, I'll go wherever and hunt, not go there.
That's how I am. I mean, maybe I am a little bit of a trophy hunter in some regards, but there's another part of it where there's a fun aspect of doing that, and like I just don't want to be done too soon. Like, if I'm going to be done, like I know there's plenty of people that shoot buck first, second week of archery season. I had an opportunity to do that last year, literally the first sit of the year. I had a buck come in, and it ended up, I'm going to say, was almost identical to size of the buck I shot the last day of rifle season. And, I mean, I had the deer 15 yards quartered away, dead to rights. Yeah. I mean, it was, I don't want to sound cocky, but my goodness, if I would have messed up that shot, I would have probably quit bow hunting. Yeah. I mean, that's not a shot I would anticipate goofing up. It's possible. It's definitely possible. But I don't know, it was a nice buck. Yeah, but I didn't want to be done like that. First time I was out, and it wasn't like a buck that you're describing where, you know, it's something to go for. And I think every season, the places I hunt, I have that potential to shoot bad buck.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just my optimism, but I just don't want to be done.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can't say I've ever had that feeling of, like, if I shoot one, I'm done. Because I know, like, my brothers would come back.
True.
They'd hunt there. And I'd just go back and video. Like, I'm completely okay sitting and just videoing my brothers, mm-hmm. my sister, my dad, whatever. Like, I'm very content with doing that. Whether, yeah, I don't need to be there, the one shooting. I may have my boat with me, but I'll tell them, you're shooting first. I don't care what comes out. And that's just how it is. Even if I'm, like, yeah, if I'm doe hunting, whatever. If I shot my buck and there's five doe in the field, I'm not shooting. Like, I'll let them wait for them to shoot. If they want to shoot a doe, they can. But yeah, so me shooting a buck the first week or first day, whatever, it don't matter to me.
Okay.
I'll do it.
That's cool, and I never thought about it that way, too, I guess, because, like, I have a lot of buddies I would hunt with, but it seems like this point in my life I can never get our schedules to line up for us to hunt together.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact that you've got some brothers and stuff to do that, that would give it a different perspective.
Yeah. I know this year's probably going to change a little bit. Scott, like, he drove truck, and now he's doing landscaping 5 days a week. So we kind of had the same schedule when we both drove. So when we were home during hunting seasons, we're going hunting.
Yep.
But he also just had a kid here in February, so that's going to change how much he gets out. So it's going to be a little different this year of who's going to be able to hunt with me or whatever the situation. But,
sure.
Yeah, if I shoot a deer, I know my place is open for them to come. If they want to come shoot whatever, they can come shoot whatever. Sit in the blind, sit down back, whatever. Like I said, I got the first doe and the first buck off the property, so they can shoot whatever. Have at it. I don't care.
It's special to shoot a deer off your place.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I've been at my place almost 6 years, 6 years in end of September, I think. And we've gotten, I think I've gotten three for sure, but I think four off of there. Brother Scott, he's gotten a doe or two off of there, and my sister got a doe off of there. So it's been supplying what we need.
Yeah. And it's just whatever you can do to keep it enjoyable. I mean, the things that I, like, I'm looking forward to my season this year. This is the first fall since I'm with my wife, and we're together, married and dating for probably 14 years. This is the first fall that she is not going to be a coach for field hockey.
Okay.
And, you know, back when we were dating and before children, that didn't matter because she'd go coach and I'd go stuff. But now we have a family. Hunting season was a little bit different for me in the fall. And, you know, on one hand, with her choosing not to coach this year, it's like, well, man, that might free up some hunting for me. But Lucas is 6, Wyatt's 4, and they're asking all the time, like, about hunting and going and doing this. And I took them turkey hunting one day this spring. Your poor brother got roped into some of that. I feel so bad. I screwed up in some of those cases, but then your brother had a good turkey hunt anyway, as it was. But, you know, I had the kids out, and, you know, my 4-year-old, he still doesn't have the attention span, and that was a comic show. But the 6-year-old, he's starting to show signs of really having some interest. And I don't want to – I really got to make a conscious effort to not ignore that, to go after a big bear, a big buck, or whatever. Like, I really need to make it a priority to get him to – and if that means sacrificing the hunt at the location I want to go in order to go and shoot a doe somewhere or – just go pheasant hunting or squirrel hunting or whatever, if it's going to keep him involved, engaged, and having fun, I'm going to make that my priority.
Yeah.
But I am looking forward. I'm going to do the October New Jersey bear season again. And I really want to make it a priority to get upstate more. I mean, I love to hunt up at state, but I haven't been doing it in the fall much. Mostly just been going like deer season, rifle season, and just doing it then. And I'd really like to archery hunt there more. I'd like to scout more, do some more prep, check some new areas out, or get to know some areas better to spend some time with the crew in rifle season. So it's, there's a lot of exciting things, but it's still so different to what I'm used to, because I used to be like you and in like gearing down my locations for archery, and that's what I geared into, and it's so different now. But there's still a lot of fun stuff for on the docket.
Yeah, I know. Like, I, you know, Sage has invited us upstate a bunch, and I know a couple times they want to do, like, opening rifle weekend up there or whatever, and I have a hard time. I'd love to do it, but I have a hard time because...
You have a tradition at home.
Yeah, tradition at home is we do deer drive Saturday morning. That's what we do. And knowing, I guess, last year... And maybe the year before, like, I feel like I've kind of taken over the lead role of getting people back there to, you know, set up drives and stuff. So for me to, like, bounce and go upstate, I'm like, well, I'm leaving all these guys hang. Yeah. And it's, I don't know, I kind of feel bad. It's one of those things where you want to be at two different spots at the same time and you have to just pick one. But yeah, I'd love to go upstate and rifle hunt some. But
what Sage and you guys need to do is you need to do it on a designated time during the week.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is that's what we did. So you know, some of my buddies around here that have hunted, you know, they you know, mostly grew up hunting patches of woods and farmland and stuff, and hunting a little bit on the mountain close to home here. But you know, my buddy Garrett, my buddy Travis, my buddy Kenny, and a couple other people that hunted their whole life and never really hunted upstate like that. And first or second year that we did the hunts up at my camp, and then would come back and show them, like, this is what we did, this is how it went, this is where we were hunting, seeing pictures and seeing some of the success. It lit a fire under him, and they're like, you know what, I can do that. I'll take a day or two off of working And we'll go up and do that. And I think they enjoy that hunt as much as anything. But it works out real well because if we hunt Thursday, Friday, a lot of those guys will go home Friday night and then still do their Saturday hunt with, you know, their wife, their kids, their dad, their, you know, whatever.
Whatever. Yeah, I think also, like, knowing what is down here. And, like, I had cameras on public already. Got some good buck on those cameras. But knowing the potential of what we have to get here, to not having any cameras upstate now. I know Sage runs cameras and stuff, and like he'll share pictures here and there. But
it's a different ball game there.
Yeah, it's a whole different ball game up there. And just having that, am I going up and am I going to see something, to knowing there's deer where we normally hunt. Like, that's the other aspect that I look at. Like, am I wasting my time, or is it like, I mean, yeah, you still go up and you have fun with your buddies and still have that camp atmosphere, but it's like that.
I've had to train my mind to reprogram expectations, because, you know, when you hunt close to home with a bow, you're doing off-season preparation and you're scouting some way, shape, or form. But you're getting to know the woods.
Yeah.
You're getting to know deer trails. You're getting to know how they behave. You're not doing that when you're going upstate. So if you go up to hunt, you're going in blind. So you got to do all that on the fly. And I've made a bad habit of training my mind that I need to be in a tree hunting. And that's just because years ago, I did my homework. I had stands or stand locations. I knew what ones to hunt them. So I hunted from a tree. And I've listened to Sage talk and some of the hunting and the styles that they've done. I mean, he's killed buck out of tree, but he's killed some deer on the ground with a bow and had some incredible encounters, and just using woodsmanship skills to learn. Listening to him talk, like, Sage has hunted in some place. He's not afraid to adventure, and that's actually what I like, and that's one of those reasons I say to him all the year, like, we need to hunt more together. And I say that selfishly because he hunts differently than me, and I'd like to learn from him, because Sage kills a ton of deer, and he's a very successful hunter. It's just his style, and I'd like to pick on Cody's brain a little bit more, because Cody is such a methodical way. But, you know, both of them are so mystical and illusion. You know, they just, you know, they're isolated individuals and don't want to come and, you know, share information with everybody.
Yeah, there is a thing about keeping things secret.
I agree.
But at the same time, like, I'm not one of those people. Like, this buck, I've kept secret. I've shared pictures to close friends, family, stuff like that, but haven't posted them anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But people say, well, stop showing them to everyone. Not to show off like what I'm hunting or what I have on my property I'm hunting, but to share it. Say, there's big deer here. I like including people in like what I'm seeing and what I'm doing and stuff like that. I don't need to like keep it all to myself and be, I guess, selfish and you're like, no, I'm not telling you a word of what I'm seeing and what I'm hunting. But yeah, like, I don't know. Upstate, it's a different animal up there. It's big woods. You can't. Yeah, you hunt funnels and you hunt little ravines and stuff like that and try to narrow down your chances of having a deer come by, but it's so big. It's like, I don't know. I enjoy going up there for bear. I enjoy going up there late season. But like you said, just getting up there to scout and figure it out takes time.
You know, I said it earlier, I was geared so much in the past, the places I hunt, the familiarity I had with it, to then just, you know, put the fine-tuned touches on as you go into hunting season. And, like, I'm not putting on hundreds of miles in March and April scouting. It's not that I don't want to.
Yeah.
I can't commit that kind of time to it and get away. I do go up in the summer and off-season scout, and I do run cameras. But it's just a bigger scene, and it takes more time, and I've just decided, like, I need to just ride it out. Just let the process, however long it takes to be successful in that situation. I mean, I've killed plenty of deer up there.
Yeah.
Shot rifle buck. I just never killed a buck with a bow up there. And just being all right with whatever, however long it takes in the process, just because I think that's the fun part too.
Yeah. Yeah, I've only gotten one deer up there, and that was the early muzzleloader season.
Oh, really?
We went up for that. I think it was a muzzleloader bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Went up there, and I got up there pretty late on Friday. Still had, I don't know, maybe an hour of light left.
Mm-hmm.
And from Sage's camp, if you go across, yep, there's a couple fields up there. It's like, well, that's the closest. I can get there the fastest. I know where it's at. So I went there not knowing they were up on that side too. And I got a doe that evening.
Cool.
And then dragging her out, I ran into Sage and I forget who else was up there. But him and a couple other guys were coming down with a doe. And we ended up meeting up at the road just out in front of the camp, basically.
Mm.
But he had no idea I was up there, and I had no idea where they were. But I shot, and like it was the first one with my inline pistol.
Oh, really?
Yeah, first one. So I was like, I yelled, hollered, and they heard me hollering. They're like, what's happening over there? And they're like, were you the one that shot? I said, yeah. Did you yell? Yeah. They're like, we heard you. But yeah, that was a good little evening. But I've hunted up there enough that I kind of know the area. I can kind of figure it out. But
just the time.
Yeah. Commitment. Knowing where the deer are and how they're moving and stuff.
Well, just kill this buck year after this year, and then maybe you can look for a new challenge.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
No, I hope that we can do some stuff together this fall, and you know, Sage and Cody included. It, you know, I had so much fun with you guys shed hunting, and we've talked about, you know, hunting and opportunities, and it's just hard to get all of our schedules to line up and do stuff, but that would be a lot of fun. And then we can continue to harass them, because I really enjoy picking on them, especially Sage. I don't know why. I just enjoy picking on my buddy Sage. Good dude. Hopefully I can get him on, and he can yap with us for a while sometime. But, man, talk, good luck this hunting season. Thanks for coming by and doing this. Anything you want to leave us with?
Not really. Yeah, just glad I get the opportunity to hunt another big one again this year, and hopefully it works more in my favor this year. But if not, I'm gonna enjoy it anyways. Just being out in the woods makes me happy.
Yeah,
just
go
out there
too,
and just not worry about work or anything. Just go out and sit and just relax and enjoy it. That's what I like doing. So
it's hard to beat.
Yeah,
hard to beat. Well, Todd, thanks again.
Not a problem.